Welcome to this interview. I'm Megan Gibson, co-host of the Relationship Super Conference. Today I'm speaking with Tana Espino, a licensed marriage and family therapist and relationship coach. She guides women to heal codependency and anxiety so they're not losing themselves in relationships. Using a trauma-informed approach, Tana focuses on somatic work as a foundation to help women deepen their connection with themselves and shift from codependency to confidence. Tana, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you, Megan, for having me on. I'm excited to talk about this topic.
Awesome. Yeah. So let's start with a wide view. Can you describe to me what codependency is and how it might look in a romantic relationship?
So codependency is pretty much a loss of self, right? It's like chronic self-neglect. We tend to overgive and overfunction. And we feel like we've learned, right? It's instead of like learned behavior. So it's not like a diagnosis or personality disorder or anything like that. It's something that's been learned, most likely from childhood. And that child kind of grows up to think that they have to pretty much work for their worth in their relationships. And they take on roles. And these roles look like, you know, being the nice girl, or in children, maybe like daddy's little girl, or, you know, in adults could look like the caretaker, the fixer, the helper, all of that kind of combined together. Mm-hmm. And so then you lose yourself in these roles, right? And you're not in your authenticity. You're in a role, and the role is there for you to, you know, pretty much on some level expect that you're going to get the person to change or get the person to love you more or whatever that might be. But it's not from a place of authenticity, because growing up, you being who you were as a child probably wasn't safe. There probably wasn't space for you to be who you were. Your feelings probably weren't met with, you know, just validation and acknowledgement that children need growing up, right? And that could be for many reasons. We see that sometimes it's because maybe parents have like substance use or mental illness and aren't there to meet the child's needs of being seen, heard, feeling safe, validated, loved, and all of that. Could be maybe parent has like postpartum depression or is very stressed, or they have their own traumas. I mean, there could be so many reasons. And then that child learns to kind of take on a certain role in that family dynamic in order to kind of feel a sense of safety and some sort of sense of control, because everything kind of seems a little bit out of control in their lives. So that seems to be kind of where it starts from, or mm-hmm. learned in the sense of maybe, you know, maybe there wasn't any of that. And maybe they just saw their, I'm just going to use in this case, the mother or the female caregiver, that they just maybe saw that mother always like just self-sacrificing, like all their needs always come last. Everyone else comes first. And so, wow, my mom is so overgiving and, you know, all of that. And so maybe they learned it that way too. So kind of.
Yeah, I've heard a lot lately. Yeah. Sorry, didn't mean to step over. I've heard a lot of talk lately about, about really holding up this female model of like all the sacrifice and all the giving and all of the right as the model for which we've all been kind of imitating and emulating our behaviors as women, and how maybe we need to step back a little bit from that, analyze if that's how we want to have the roles in our families and relationships.
Right, exactly. Yes. Yeah.
And I'm glad that you unpacked kind of what it means to be unsafe, because obviously, you know, kind of from a trauma perspective, we think of unsafe as being, you know, your life is in danger, or you're threatened, or
right.
But there's so much more that can happen as far as how you develop your relationships with people that doesn't necessarily that you were undernourished or right. in physical or emotional danger. It's more right. subtle, the way that children can develop, and it's not conscious, right? I mean, these are things yeah. that your subconscious is doing, and right. connections and patterns that it's making as a result of your environment, not because you've decided, oh, I'm going to be funny in order to make up for the tension
exactly.
in my house, right?
Yes. Exactly. Right. It's usually something unconscious that happens. And right. It's not something conscious that a children's thinking like, oh, actually, I know that this has nothing to do with me, the fact that my parents are arguing. And so it's like, no, it's, you know, children kind of like they make it mean something about them. And so then they kind of just put the pieces together and create a narrative. And then that's where beliefs are formed and all of that. So, yeah.
Right. I'm going to get good grades in school and I'm never going to be a problem. And I'm going to be extremely responsible, not because that's a value to me and not because that's my self-identity, but because that's how I keep myself safe in this family system. This is how I don't create problems or add to people's stress, like that kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. It could look something like that. Absolutely. Where, and even that's a loss of self there too. The authenticity is kind of, it's not there because that child believes like, well, yeah, I have to get the good grades. This is a way that maybe by me getting good grades, I could ease my mom's worries about my dad's drinking or, you know, who knows whatever is going on in the dynamic. And so, yeah, the authenticity is lost there.
Yeah. Cause I think a lot of what we're all seeking is like connection and validation. Right. And so as children, perhaps we're testing out behaviors, we're testing out agendas, we're testing out patterns to see which one of those gets us the connection and the validation that we're looking for.
Right. Exactly.
So what's at the core of codependency as when you kind of discover it as an adult?
Yeah, at the core, what I see and an experience is the unconscious belief of not feeling good enough and not feeling worthy. So kind of going back to the roles, like if we have that unconscious belief and that core belief that's usually developed in childhood, right? Like I'm not good enough. So I have to do these things then to feel like I'm at least good enough and all of that. When we have that belief, then we know that unconscious beliefs are going to behave a certain way. We're probably going to think a certain way around it. So feelings of not good enough or not feeling worthy of love and all of that. And then from there, you're going to take on a role, right? You're going to perform. So the role, like, let's say like the good wife or like the nice girl or the fixer, the helper, the caretaker, the peacemaker. And then from that role, you're going to behave a certain way. And those behaviors can look like the people pleasing, the overfunctioning, the overgiving, the self-sacrificing. And then again, with the unconscious belief of expecting something in return from the behaviors, like expecting your partner to change. Well, if I just do X, Y, and Z, right? Like if I just, the self-sacrificing, maybe he will see how lovable I am or, you know, and he won't leave or whatever the thing is. So that it's kind of like, that's what I've seen, like this at the root, like this feeling of not feeling good enough. And then you're going to take on this role and you're going to behave a certain way based on this role. And then you're expecting something based on how you're behaving. And it's just, unfortunately, it loses, you obviously lose your sense of self. You're already, you know, you're not in tune with the connection to yourself and your intuition and all of that. But that would make sense because as a child, if you, didn't feel safe or there wasn't space for your own emotions or you were told maybe you shouldn't be sad. Like, why are you crying? Right. So then you kind of like doubt your internal experience. And then of course that plays out then in relationships because then you just are not in touch with your intuition and you're more in touch with like these rules because you feel like you have to, you know, perform for love and attention and all of that.
Do you find that when people come to you for advice, that they're kind of at the beginning of this, right? Where they come to you and they say, I have the family I always wanted. I have the job I always wanted. And I'm so deeply unhappy and I don't understand why. And you've got to kind of put that lens on. Or since we're talking about relationships and dating, it's I've got I've had the same pattern in relationships where people are taking advantage of me. And now I feel like, you know, this person I'm dating, I feel like their mother, or I feel like I'm managing their life when they should be taking responsibility for it. So they come to you confused by their discomfort and trying to look for the reason.
Yes. Trying to look for the reason. So I feel that it is helpful to you know, we could say, go back and talk about, like, let's talk about childhood. Like, you know, what was going on there? A lot of the times too, what I've noticed, it's sometimes like, let's say there wasn't anything going on in childhood and they just happened to get with someone who, I don't know, maybe let's say had like a severe mental illness or substance abuse, and then the codependency starts there. Right. And it begins there. Because now, I don't know, maybe there's manipulation going on or for whatever reason. And so then they find it hard to leave that relationship. But yes, I think it is important to bring in the context or kind of explore to kind of go back, because the clients that I work with do want to have an understanding of like, well, why do I keep attracting the same type of person? Or, you know, and then they blame themselves, and then they might go into like a shame spiral of like, what is it about me that, let's say, I keep attracting men who cheat on me or whatever that might be? And then the other layer to that, then it's also exploring with the codependency. It's also exploring, you know, going back to exploring like some of the childhood wounds. And what I've noticed, and I think this is like really big out there too, that, you know, our unconscious mind likes what's familiar. And it feels, you know, that's what feels safe, what's familiar. And so then if, let's say, you know, that child didn't get what they needed from one of their parents, or there was like just unresolved, unfinished business, right? The unconscious mind wants to recreate that in a present partner relationship. So I say, like, whatever happened in a past parental relationship, the unconscious mind wants to kind of recreate in order to repair and make it better this time around in a present partner relationship. And so that's another thing too that I've noticed, that we try to explore, again, going back into the dynamics of childhood and, you know, what was happening with that, with the caregiver or parent or parents or whatever was going on there, because that's going to be the template or blueprint of, you know, their romantic relationships.
So instead of necessarily in this instance, if I'm hearing you right, it's not that you're playing out the exact role that you had in childhood. It's that you're in a relationship. It might be a healthy, stable relationship. And that is uncomfortable because it's not what you're accustomed to because of a chaotic childhood or some instability or, you know, substance abuse, mental illness of a parent. The role that you had in childhood is not being reflected in this relationship. And so you're coming into it kind of as the chaos agent. You can't identify why you're uncomfortable. So you're going to stir the pot and create a little drama or create dynamics that aren't there in order to get the chaos comfort that you're accustomed to.
That's exactly. So if it's in that context of like someone who's, you know, readily available and secure and they're healthy and all of that. Yes, that, because that feels unfamiliar, then sometimes there's a little bit of that like self-sabotage, which is really all about self-protection, because it's like, this doesn't feel familiar. This feels unfamiliar. I don't know how to maybe be in a relationship where I can actually receive that healthy love and attention and affection without me having to actually work for it. Or I've had like some clients also talk about like when, you know, let's say they're used to kind of a dynamic where the partners are always arguing, but they're always trying to kind of compete with each other about who's right or who's wrong. And then when they get into another relationship, let's say where that's not going on and the partner's actually listening and saying, oh, actually, yeah, let me take accountability for that. You know what? I did do that thing. I apologize. They're almost like, oh, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to respond to this. I only know kind of like how to get back at you and have this dance like go back and forth. So yeah, like there's a lot of like, kind of like, whoa, this is different. And they're not used to it. And then it feels unfamiliar, or it feels like there's not enough chemistry, or it feels boring, or, you know, yeah.
Right. Safety and security can feel boring if you haven't had that kind of an environment in your life often.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Do you think you could take me through kind of an example of somebody who's in a relationship and give me both the healthy response and the codependent response to a situation? Let's say, for instance, somebody's got a partner, there's somebody they're dating that has some depression issues, they're out of the job market and they're looking for a job. What might the codependent response to that look like? What might the healthier response to that look like?
Yeah, that's such a great question. That's good. So partner's depressed, doesn't have a job. Codependent response would look like that person feeling responsible, and that's a key word, they're feeling responsible for pretty much kind of like taking their experience, meaning their feelings, their behaviors, their problems, their situation, like taking their experience and like a Rubik's Cube, kind of like solving and figuring it out for them. And it's like, okay, here, I solved it for you, right? But there's a feeling of like that sense of feeling like I have to do this. I have to do this for my partner. I feel responsible for, finding them the job, or I don't know, whatever that might be. Like I feel a sense of responsibility, which means then as tired and maybe fatigued as I am, because I've worked like 10 hours a day or whatever, that like I have to put that to the side. And I have to make my partner feel better and fix them and all of that. And then if I don't do that, or if I try to set a limit or boundary, I experience high anxiety. Like there's a difference there between like a sense of, I want to help because I can. And like, I know that even if I don't like, and even if there's other ways that I could support you, it's all going to be good and the world isn't going to fall apart, right? There's a difference between that and like when I feel like I'm taking I'm taking a step back and I'm in this codependent pattern and I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to just support you and I'm setting a limit. Then there's so much internal distress going on because it's like, I just have to jump in and like save and fix you and all of that. So that would be like a codependent behavior, codependent response to a situation like that, where there's a lot of internal distress. And there's a sense of responsibility and like almost like duty to like just take full control of that person's experience, and fix it for them. And, you know, and then enabling might come in somewhere in there at times.
It's kind of like that compulsive need to do. And then the really extreme discomfort if you don't do the thing that you know you could do.
Exactly. And then with that, of course, comes whatever like codependent thinking might come from there, from maybe even trying to set a boundary, because it's like, well, then what if he leaves? Or I feel bad because I should be able to do this. And, you know, all these like thoughts that kind of creep in. Because again, it goes back into like, I don't feel good enough. And I have to do these things to feel like I am good enough and to show you that I am worthy and all of that. So that would be like a codependent response. And a healthier response, looks like if you have the emotional bandwidth to help in any way, whether that could be maybe looking at like, mental health places for your partner to go to because they're depressed, or if you have the emotional bandwidth, right, and you're not, you're not chronically in a self-neglect mode and you have the bandwidth and you're like, you know what, I think I could support in this way. Then that sounds okay, right? You're just checking in with yourself, like, do I have this bandwidth for this? And also like, can my partner actually, you know, does he actually have the energy to actually go on Google and maybe type up a few things where he can get some support for his depression? And maybe from there also, find, you know, a job that he can, like, does he have that energy to do that? Right. Like, oh, he does. Okay. So, you know, I'm going to be here to support him in that, in whatever way that looks like, where I do have that emotional bandwidth to support, but also where I'm not like taking his experience that is composed of his behaviors and feelings and situations and all of that. Like, I'm not taking it from him and like figuring it out for him and then giving it back to him, that like, I'm with his experience. Right? Like, I'm holding space, I'm with his experience, and I can support in a way that might look like finding some, you know, mental health resources for him, but that like, he's making also an effort to then call those places or, you know, whatever that might look like. And if I am feeling grounded and centered and secure in this relationship, and it's not anything with a codependent patterns or behaviors, then I know that if for whatever reason, the only support in this moment that I could give him is just listening to what he's experiencing, then I'm not going to have that anxiety internally of like, oh my gosh, like I have to do more than just listen to what he's expressing. Like I have to, like, no, if I feel really grounded and secure in myself and I'm aligned, you know, with my authenticity and all of that, then I know that even by just me being here with him and his experience is more than enough.
Right. And even in that, being able to really evaluate, like, I hear that you want to talk. It's important to me that we speak. Now's not a great time. I will come back to you at this time or on this date, or, you know, we will talk about it. It's important to me. You're important to me, but I can't do that right now. Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Great.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
And then I know we're focused on women because that's the majority of your clientele. Mm-hmm. But quickly, can you say anything about what codependency might look like in men? Does it look different or is it identical? How might it show up differently in men?
Yeah, you know what? I have worked with like a small handful of men that have experienced codependent patterns. And I find in my experience with these clients, it's similar. It's like that need, like, I don't feel like I'm doing enough. I feel like, you know, I have to show them that I am a good person or I am a good, whatever that means. So they also do the performing for that love and affection. And in combination, they also experience anxiety around that as well. Like in the anxiety around being alone or like not having someone there either, or like the anxiety around fear of losing their relationship or the connection with a person, which is similar of what I see with the woman that I work with. So I want to say that there is definitely similarities from my experience working with male clients who also have codependency.
I can hear that a really important part of if you recognize that you have codependent patterns and relationships is probably setting boundaries. So we talked a little bit about that just now, but about kind of evaluating, and I've heard you say several times, evaluating your bandwidth or how much space you have, how much you have to give. So I'd love if you said a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So with boundaries, you know, definitely if you've never set them before or kind of went back on your word when you're setting them like kind of 1 foot in, 1 foot out, like it's definitely challenging and it's definitely a practice. But the thing with boundaries is that if you haven't really started to connect back with yourself, like just basics of like, what are my basic needs right now? Like, oh, I'm tired. I should probably sleep instead of maybe doing all these things for other people or whatever the thing is, right? It's a little bit challenging to set boundaries because boundaries are about like, let me just check in. Am I okay with this? Or how do I feel about that? Or it's about checking in with like, what's going on, what's true for you internally. And if we're disconnected from ourselves, then it's a little bit hard to figure out what are our boundaries? How do I even set them? Like, well, am I really tired or can I really help them with that? Like, that's what I've seen with, and this is all my experience because I've, everything that I teach and support my clients with is because I've experienced this myself. It's what I've noticed. It's that sense of, well, I mean, I could really do that thing that like, I want to set a boundary on. So how do I know if it's really something that, you know, I do want to do or not? And it can get a little bit fuzzy when you have been disconnected for yourself for so long, which is what codependency is, right? Like a disconnect from self, your internal kind of experience. So I want to say that with boundaries, the pre-work for boundaries is starting to get connected with yourself on a basic level, like I said, like, oh, I'm thirsty. I should probably drink the water instead of kind of ignoring that, or I'm tired, or, you know, just like super basic. And then kind of moving on up to the more emotional things such as, oh, I'm really stressed today. What do I need for myself? Getting that in place, then working with boundaries, right? Because then with boundaries, you're able to check in and see what is it that I'm okay with and what is it that I'm not okay with, right? And with, you know, boundaries and people pleasing, it's like you're always saying yes to everyone else and you're always saying no to yourself. And then you continue that, then it's like continuing more of a disconnect from yourself because you're just externally looking at like, well, what is it that everyone else wants or needs? And so I'm going to like attend to that. And so then my boundaries just get really blurry. So getting to know yourself, at least starting to get to know yourself so that you could check in, because boundaries is all about checking in. And it's not about, you know, building up a wall or blocking yourself from anyone else. Actually, it brings you closer together to the other person. Actually, it makes you connect more with the other person because you're speaking from an authentic place. Like you're being real about what you're saying. You're saying, actually, yeah, I can't do that thing that I really want to do with you, and we're going to have to reschedule, or whatever the boundary is, right? And sometimes what happens, and I've had some clients share this with me, and you know, they might say, let's say they say yes to something, and at the end they're like, I know I shouldn't have said yes, and like now I feel like I have to say yes because like I, you know, I want to be with in integrity with what I said, and I'm like, but actually, you're not in integrity in general, because that's not really what you internally, you don't want to do this. So you're already not being in integrity. So it's okay then to say no. If you're talking about integrity, then it's okay to say no, because you're saying yes to something that actually you don't want to do. But then you're saying that like you should follow through with it because you want to live with integrity and in your word. But in reality, you're not, because internally, you know, it's a no. Your body's like, no, we don't have the bandwidth for this. And you're saying yes. So already not in integrity. Yeah.
It's because it's such a familiar place when you're a codependent pattern to abandon and not even consider your own needs, wants, or desires.
Right.
That's like your operating system, right? Is like external, yeah, everyone else commitments first. So to exactly pause first and say, like, what did I like before this happened? What did I enjoy doing? What is meaningful to me? And then start like adding pieces back in. And I know that I know you spoke about having personal experience, and this is kind of where your work comes from, and, mm-hmm, and why you like doing it. Yes. I also have personal experience with this, and I know in my particular situation, and I know a lot of people can relate to this. One of my relationships had substance abuse problems, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, one of them had high medical need problems. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm, in both of those situations, it can be very easy to abandon yourself because it feels like life and death all the time, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so mm-hmm, once I started unpacking some codependent relationships and became aware of my methodology of coping and functioning and placing value on the way I functioned and showed up for other people and making meaning in my life that way instead of about mm-hmm what I wanted, mm-hmm, it was really interesting and difficult to set those boundaries and to say, you know, to see a call come in from someone and to just take a moment, literally out loud, I would say out loud, and my children would laugh at me. I would say out loud, like, do I have space for this right now? Do I have the energy for this right now? And once I started, I had to say it out loud, because if I thought it, I would obviously like, all the other voices would be like, girl, pick up the phone. Right. but once I started doing that, I started, you know, it was like baby steps. It was like, I'm not going to take that phone call. I will text and say, I don't have space for this right now. I will talk to you at this time. I'm sure people watching this have encountered those kinds of situations before where it really feels like life and death, and I just want to say, like, that's also a possible situation in which you can have your own thoughts, feelings, boundaries, needs. Those are more than ever important.
Yes, absolutely. And also without the example that you're giving and your experience, also kind of knowing that, like, I don't have to do all of this alone, right? If you're having a partner that has like a, let's say like a severe medical illness or something, where it's like, where else can I reach out for support too, so that I don't feel like I have to just take it all on and just be the only one to do this? Because sometimes that, something like that can happen too, where, you know, that person feels they want to be in control and they want to be the one to like, because I could do it better, or like, no, I'll take it on. And, you know, because also there's like some elements of control where then it's hard for them to receive the support or ask for the support from others, right, together to kind of help with something like that.
Absolutely. When you're doing it all, receiving help or asking for help feels like a threat. You're like, but I'm already, how could I possibly hand you one of these balls when I've already got them juggling, right? Like, they're all in the air. How do you expect me to give you one?
right. And I think something that you mentioned too, like with baby steps, that is so important with boundaries. It is about baby steps, because when you slowly start setting it, you're going to feel, it's like there's a, I like to show kind of like a visual of like two ends, right? Like someone who has just the blurry boundaries and someone who has this very rigid boundaries. And in the middle, I like to say like the middle is that healthy, like embodied boundaries, because it is about checking in, right? And so someone like on this end where the boundaries are so blurry, as they're working towards getting more to the embodied boundaries, healthy center, they feel like, ooh, I feel like I'm being mean. They start getting anxious about, well, what are the other people going to think, because they were maybe so used to this person not having boundaries and maybe always saying yes to everything. So once they start setting it, there is this discomfort of like, oh, I did it. And like, oh my gosh, like that was a lot. And like, I feel like I'm being very rude and mean, or like, you know, because I'm starting to set this limit. So it is baby steps. And the only way to do this is to actually start practicing the boundary setting and to start working at it in increments, but also like kind of checking in internally, like, okay, I said the thing that I was supposed to say, or I'm about to send this email that like, I'm so anxious about, but I have to set the limit. And so it's working through the anxiety, right? Because part of it also is like, I don't want to feel the anxiety, so I'm just going to say yes. Or I don't want to feel the internal distress, so I'm going to agree, or I'm going to say yes, I'm just going to do the thing, because I'm trying to avoid my internal experience. So then the boundary piece here is like little by little, as I sent that email out, or as I did the thing, like, whew, okay, I'm going to work through some of the anxiety that I'm feeling pre or post doing, setting the boundary.
Right.
Yeah.
And I know for me personally, there is also an aspect of, you know, you set the boundary and one of two things usually happens. Someone completely respects it and like it surprises you with their reaction. Mm-hmm. But then later, whether they know they're doing it or not, tests that boundary, right?
Yeah.
And they like not forget it, but they're just, sure. Or sometimes I think they just do. Like you had this, like you built yourself up. You did all this, like you practiced your speech, you set the line, you drew the boundary, you know, you did all this work around it. And then they were like, yeah, absolutely, sure. And then like 2 weeks later, they do the exact same thing that they were doing before. And you're like, we just talked about this, right? So there's always testing, I find. Or the other reaction is that you set the boundary and immediately the person has like a super aggressive negative reaction.
Yeah.
Because your boundary is a threat to them because they've depended on you so much and you've been in that relationship, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And then it just starts to change the dynamic, because if there was a dynamic around, you know, one person, which is the person that has the blurry boundaries, always saying yes and kind of, you know, the people pleaser. And if this person was used to that because they have another role in this friendship or whatever dynamic is here, then yeah, when this person starts getting to more embodied boundaries and this is like, ooh, how do I respond to that? And then sometimes, you know, the relationship or friendship starts to shift. Other times this person, you know, it becomes healthier. Other times it's like, ooh, like, I don't know how to navigate this. And then, you know, it just kind of shifts.
Right. Yeah. And we all have to be more comfortable with our relationships shifting, right? And changing.
Yeah.
It's not worth us abandoning ourselves to preserve something that isn't working.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it.
And I know you've mentioned kind of feelings, which, you know, mm-hmm. I can think my way through things all mm-hmm. day long. I'm mm-hmm. expert at it. But let's talk about like your body, and you talked about anxiety a little bit and that feeling, but let's really kind of dig into what these kind of these patterns of behavior to establish value and worth in yourself might feel mm-hmm. like in your body, how you might feel cues that something is off and that you need to pay more attention to what your patterns of behavior are, what these roles you're playing are. Are there body cues that you can feel that will help you tune into that?
Yeah. So helping you tune into more of like what's happening in these codependent patterns. Is what you're
absolutely. Or like when you're out of integrity with what your needs and desires are and have kind of abandoned yourself as well.
Right. That's a good question. Cause what I've seen, and this is also my own experience, it looks like a full spectrum of different things. So definitely there's, with anxiety can manifest differently for everyone. And so sometimes that might look like, let's say constantly just feeling like, there's this like impending doom, or like there's something bad's going to happen, or, constantly just maybe, distracting themselves. So that could be with like social media or something. So there's something internally. And so then they just, the behavior piece looks like distraction, whether that's like getting on the phone, scrolling, and then putting that down, but then switching to TV. Like it could look something like that. It could look like, if there's been, let's say like an argument with a partner, they don't hear from their partner for several hours, which maybe for that person might feel like it's an eternity, not hearing from for several hours. Maybe during that time they notice like, oh my gosh, I can't eat. I haven't eaten all day. I haven't had an appetite. So that's like a clue right there. Or like my stomach feels like it's in knots, or oh, I'm starting to get really nauseous. I feel like it's getting hot, or like I can't take a full breath. Like these little clues there in your body that it's letting you know that your system's activated, because your system perceives that something or whatever is going on is a threat of some sorts. And so then it starts getting into this like activation. And usually what I see has been with codependency has been more so anxiety. Of course, you know, there's depression too, anxiety or depression, but mainly it's been a lot of anxiety that I work with clients, and what I've seen mainly with the codependent behaviors, codependent patterns.
That tracks.
The other sign actually that like, let's say, you touched on it a little bit, but if it's not the body parts where it's heaviness or rapid heart rate or feeling maybe nauseous or you haven't eaten or like knots in your stomach, then it's going to be the obsessive thinking or like the rumination. Like that's how you know also that something here is happening, because the state that we're in is going to send the message to the brain, and the brain is going to start creating stories around our internal state. So the obsessive thinking or whatever's happening, the rumination of constantly just worried about that thing, it's almost like taking a pause and saying, okay, whoa, I'm noticing like this is going on. Let me just check in on what's happening internally here. Oh, wow. I'm feeling like numb and I can't really feel anything. Or, oh, wow, I notice like my stomach does feel like it's in knots, or my chest feels like there's like pressure or something sitting on my chest. So there are going to be these cues from your body. And sometimes if we're so used to it, we kind of think like, oh yeah, like, you know, it just happens. I always get nauseous, I haven't talked to my partner. It's just, you know, a thing, but it's like, no, this is your body's response kind of telling you that it feels like there's a threat, somewhere. And so your system is just activated.
Right. Yeah. And I know that, you know, for people that are in the codependent part where they're kind of abandoning their own needs and mm-hmm. doing for others, just abandoning the way that your body feels completely tracks, right? Like I'm going to not only ignore my own wants and desires and needs, but also the way I actually feel. That can all be pushed away in service of other people.
Absolutely. Yeah. And even with like emotions too, because we know emotions are also in the body and we feel them differently. You know, if we're sad or we feel like crying, sometimes we feel like that knot in our throat, maybe when we're angry, we feel really hot or like our heart starts to race. So sometimes even the emotions, we might suppress in some of these relationships because we feel that it's not, safe to have these emotions, or because we've just never been in tune with them, because maybe in childhood we hadn't, and you know, then we also suppress that and we don't kind of listen to those cues from our emotions. And so then sometimes doing this work and starting to get connected back with our bodies and starting to kind of connect back with our emotions or certain emotions that we've kind of gave up for the purpose of the dynamic of the family system or our relationships, it can feel really scary in the body to start feeling some of these emotions. So it's almost like you're kind of dipping your toe in, kind of feeling it a little bit, and then kind of like reeling it back in and doing whatever coping that you normally do or whatever else. But it's almost like it is baby steps with all of this work.
Yeah. So kind of, yeah, I think that people want a prescription for breaking codependency, and you know, obviously there is no like one and done solution. It is a series of many, many baby steps, as you've already described, yes. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you're, you know, you have a partnership and you kind of realize that you're in codependent patterns, how do you recommend a person approach that conversation? Like when, how?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, I think the when would be when both partners are just in a place where no one's activated or no, or it's not during some type of argument, but just more so like, whoa, you know, wow, I read this book and I feel like I'm, you know, as an example, right? Like, I feel like I do have some codependent patterns. Okay, I'm going to like bring this up to my partner in a casual conversation, but not when we're both kind of, you know, activated or feeling stressed or anxious. And just really bringing it up, just saying, hey, you know what, maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe if it's through a book or a blog they read and just being really honest, having that open conversation. Hey, I read something and it kind of resonated with me. And I think we might be in this pattern. And, you know, I don't know if it's a blog or a book, then it's like, I'd like for you maybe to kind of look at a few things that I've seen. And I want to hear your thoughts on what you think about this, because it seems to be accurate or seems to be kind of matching up. And then from there, assuming the partner is open to hearing that person out, then from there, it could look like, yeah, so let's, you know, we're about our growth. So let's talk about ways that we can actually maybe seek some support, right? If we're both in this, it's helpful to get some type of support to help us maybe navigate through this and try to see how we could change our patterns, right? So it's kind of just straight up having that conversation with them, assuming that the partner is going to be open and reciprocate that as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I found that the person on, and I'm going to say beneficial side of the codependency, but that's not the right term, but often the one person is high functioning and doing a lot and over-serving and abandoning themselves, and other people are benefiting from that in the relationship. And I found that it helps me personally to say, you know, I'm getting into these behavior patterns and I found that I'm stressed and I'm tired and I'm not very much fun and I'm responding unfairly when things come up that should not throw me out of whack. So because of that, I need to, you know, set some boundaries about the way that I'm showing up. I need to change some things because I want to be more available for fun and play and flexibility. And that's how we're going to get there. And yes, normally the response I get when I say something like that is completely like, oh, I totally understand that, right? Like, it doesn't sound like as much of a threat because I'm trying to get, I'm trying to get here where I'm not just doing less for you. I'm going to be more fun too.
Yeah. I love that. Yes.
I know you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but we were talking specifically kind of about romantic relationships. But if you've found yourself and it's occurred to you that you're in a codependent relationship, romantically, chances are that you're in several, maybe outside of that romantic relationship. So kind of what's the, and they can look different depending on what the nature of the relationship is, right? Like one might be a physical caretaking. If you've got somebody that's medically fragile, one might be a mental and emotional codependency. One might be just a real boundaries issue at work where your boss is abusing your evenings and weekends. How do you encourage people to kind of do that self-evaluation? When might they want to look at their other relationships? And what would you recommend like as an approach to that?
Yeah, that's a good question. In any of those situations, you're most likely feeling some dissatisfaction. So what I mean is that like, you're either like, oh, I'm so tired today. It's just been such a long day at work. Or like, oh, I've been working 6 days straight because my boss has asked me to, like, you're going to feel some, like, you're not going to be this like joyous, like grounded, you know, feeling really secure and just like relaxed and, you know, person. Like there's going to be some, like, you're always going to be either, you might be complaining about something, whether that's because your physical body's feeling so drained or emotionally, like there's always going to be something. And it's in that, it's in that dissatisfaction that you're looking at, like, well, wait, you're doing like a reassessment. Like, wow, like I've been so tired all this week. Let me see what's been going on. Oh, that's right. Like my boss has, you know, asked me to do like seven projects and I know that I could have passed it on to Sally, but like I didn't. And so I kind of took it on because I feel like I need to show that I'm like the best worker so that I could get that promotion or I don't know, whatever. Right. So it's kind of like reevaluating like, oh yeah, I'm so tired. Or whether that's in a friendship where maybe it feels one-sided, maybe you're the one, you're the glue to the friend group or whatever. And you're constantly trying to set up dates to go out to eat or, you know, all of these things. And then you feel resentful. So maybe there's, you know, you're going to feel resentful. That's kind of like a little clue. They're like, oh, I'm starting to feel resentful. Let me see what's going on. Oh, that's right. I'm always constantly reaching out to my friends, et cetera, et cetera. So there's, you're going to feel something. Resentment, drained, dissatisfaction, something that lets you know. And when you feel that, then you're almost kind of assessing like, well, what took place this week or what has been happening recently that like I'm feeling this way. I don't feel the joy or I don't feel the relaxation or calmness, or I just don't feel good about myself or, you know, something. So that's one starting place. And then you're looking at like, whether it's work or a friendship or like family situation.
Right. It's like something that brings you joy, whether it be the relationship or the work that you do. You're like, normally this is a great part of my life. It's very fulfilling, but I'm not feeling fulfilled. I'm not feeling validated in this. So I've got to look at what's changed, what's shifted, what's different that I can adjust in order to get back to that feeling.
Exactly. Like what, exactly. What can I adjust? Can I ask for more support? I guess like if we're talking about like family situation, right? Like, can I ask for more support? Or if it's talking about work, the thing here with even I'm thinking about work and like people pleasing and boundaries, you can, even if you said yes, you can always go back and say no. Like, it doesn't have to be like, I've already said yes. It's like, you can reassess, like if we're talking about work and you're feeling so tired and you're like, whoa, wait a second. I know why I'm so moody and tired. It's because I've taken on 7 projects. I said yes to this one. Maybe I couldn't take it on. Okay, so that's an opportunity. You could go back to your boss and know that you can say no. You could have these conversations and say, you know, actually, I know I said yes, but now that I'm looking at things, like I can't take this much on, right? Can we pass this on to someone else? Or let's brainstorm another way that we could do this, right? So it is about kind of like checking in and noticing, yeah, I don't feel good, or I'm starting to feel really irritated and resentful about this thing. Where is this coming from? Let me see, kind of reassessing and then seeing like, okay, what then can I have control over and what can I change about this situation? Like, what can I myself do to change something here that I have to maybe readjust or like reassess?
Right. That resentment clue is key.
Absolutely.
Well, this has been amazing. Thank you very much, Tana.
Yeah. Thank you, Megan.
How can people find out more about you and your work?
Yeah. I'm on Instagram at, my handle is loves.hustle, H-U-S-T-L-E, and on my website, www.loveshustle.com.
Thank you so much for joining me today.
Of course. Thank you so much.